Mine's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Mine's good.
Got real close.
Did I hear high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Ooh. Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham. Scott. Alongside, as always, hello, Scott.
Sean, hello, hello. I think last time we told people we were finally able to listen to our theme song, but it's pretty fun. We were dancing a little bit, having a good time. Let's clip that.
Yeah, I'll clip it and post it, get it out there. Because, yeah, it's kind of fun, and it doesn't save me that much time afterwards, but it saves me a little time.
Yeah, and, in this day and age, Sean, every little bit counts.
In this economy?
In this economy, come on.
Yeah, so that's a nice little change here. Also got the outro as part of it as well, so maybe I'll clip that. We danced a little last week to it, so do the same here. As we are still in the season of champions, we are in our routine here of recapping one event and looking ahead to the next event. So the 2026 Men's World Curling Championship kicks off on Friday, 27th of March, coming up this week. I will put down in the show notes below a timestamp for when we'll start talking about the Men's Worlds. But first, shout out Julie Chen. But first, we have to talk about the 2026 Women's World Curling Championship, which wrapped up in Calgary over the weekend. And Scott, the names might change, but the results say the same. It was Switzerland winning the 2026 Women's Worlds. Xenia Schwaller and her team of rookies get through the round robin, only losing one game, and then work their way through the playoffs, 2-0 in the playoffs semifinal final, beating Kerry Anderson and Canada on Sunday evening. Scott, let's start there with that final. And I thought it kind of summarized the whole week a little bit, that Kerry Anderson and Team Canada were good and at times were very good over the course of the week, but Xenia Schwaller and her team were better.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway that I had for sure watching that game. There were just some opportunities missed by Team Canada. A couple of misses by Team Schwaller, but at times when they could afford to make those misses, not the case for Team Canada. So, what do they say? It's like all about timing, right?
Yeah,
it's not how many you miss, it's when you miss. And the misses were capitalized on by Team Switzerland, and that's too bad. I think Team Canada played like really well most of the week. A little bit of a dip in the middle, but at the end of it, the team that was best all week won. The team that was better in that game on Sunday won. And I don't have any other grand takeaways other than that the team that was better won.
Yeah. And if you look at the percentages over the course of the week, either Canada or Switzerland was the top at each position. So Carly Burgess was the best lead, and the Swiss were best at second, third, and skip. And Selena Reischiger was second at the leads. And the Canadians were second in the other Everyone three else. Positions.
Yeah.
So they were the two best teams over the course of the week. And it frankly wasn't really even that close, given that Team Gim did not play up to their standard. And I think Fujisawa was a little off, certainly towards the end of the week as well. So with those being the other two, I think, principal contenders in this field, it really was just Canada and Switzerland that were, I think, very clearly lined up for the gold medal game. Scott, I think the game really came down to the fifth end for me, as it's tied 2-2 in the fifth. Schwaller has the hammer, and as Kerry Anderson goes to throw her last, she is sitting one, and Xenia Schwaller's second shot And Canada tries to come in to the top 4 foot. The shot zone is exposed at least half, if not two thirds, on the in-turn side. So Canada decides to come the out-turn side. And as Carrie Anderson is going down to throw it, it's a good steal opportunity that mm-hmm. she's trying to come behind a long center and one in the top 12 foot. And if she gets that to top button, it's really hard for Switzerland to score if they can score at all. Comes up light, doesn't get it into even second shot position. It's in the top 12 foot, frozen on almost on the one she's trying to come around. And Jeanne Swaller has a relatively simple shot for the two. And she goes up 4-2 there. And as I was watching, I kind of felt like that might be it for as good as that Swiss team can hit. So again, that's not a huge indictment on Carrie Anderson that she missed, I think, her best chance to take control of the game because it's one shot. But when you're playing somebody who's that good defensively, when you get that one shot, you kind of have to make it. And in this case, she didn't. And Switzerland really controlled the game all the way through the end.
Yeah, and it was funny when they talked about calling that shot. They talked about throwing the outturn, which they ended up throwing. But they also talked about maybe throwing the in-turn.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I just don't want to give her a double. Makes sense.
Yep.
But the way the rocks are positioned, you could kind of probably Christmas tree it, half bury it. So you half bury behind the center and you're half guarding the one on the outside. It's really precise. It's got to be perfect. But they knew the path a lot better on that in-turn side mm-hmm. as opposed to what they ended up throwing on the out-turn side. And I think that's where it caught them a little bit. Not having as good a read on the path and how the rock was going to react. And so, you know, as a team, they played what they thought was the safer shot to not give a double, to give a chance for two. But because they didn't have the full information in that pathway, it was that much harder to play what on its surface is a simpler shot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's one of those decisions that you got to execute either way. And it might have been easier to execute on the other side. But, you know, we say that with hindsight. And if she's like 2 feet heavier on her draw, she gets around and is able to sit the two. And then at least you're forcing, right?
Yeah. As we say, the only wrong shot, the only wrong call is the one that you don't have confidence in, the one that you're not going to make, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. In that case, I could see why they were very hesitant to go in turn side because she can, Jeanne Swaller can hit, man. Yep. Could she hit? So I get the call, but yeah, you're right. You just have to, at that point, it just comes down to execution. And so second half, Canada then gets forced in the sixth, seventh, Jeanne Swaller misses a relatively easy hit. She's facing two, ends up rolling out, gives up the steal. But even at that, they didn't really even make that big a deal of it on the broadcast because it's tied and Schwaller's got the hammer playing yeah. eight. And they, you know, they make a big deal, but that's what you want. So I don't think even Jeanne Swaller was too crushed about rolling out in that spot and then comes and gets the deuce in eight, which is what you want to do in that scenario. Force in nine and the game was pretty much over.
Yeah. I mean, the deuce in eight was tricky, right? Because she wanted to. So on Carrie Anderson's first, she played it. There was two reds sort of stacked on top of a yellow. So Canada was sitting second shot, but then Switzerland had third shot behind a corner guard and Canada had another red on top. So what they wanted to do at the time was hit that combination and try to get the top rock frozen on top of the corner,
right.
Yellow stone, remove the yellow shot stone, and then sit two that way. Carrie Anderson sort of half made it. She was like I think outside. The rock didn't hit enough of the stone it was trying to hit, pushed it on top of the yellow, but passed it.
Yeah.
And then her shooter rolled all the way out of the house.
Yeah.
And so really missed it the wrong way, let Switzerland hit to sit two, which they did. They rolled away pretty much an impossible double at that point. So that's another situation where they were not necessarily set up to be giving a free two, mm-hmm. but just the execution on that was not good enough.
Yeah.
It was just in that situation.
Missing. Yeah. 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 100%. And then, yeah, the 10th, again, pretty easy shot for Xenia Schwaller to cap it off.
Yeah.
Canada did their best and, you know, they made them make all their shots. They had to make all eight, but they did. So that was it. And Xenia Schwaller is your world champion. Scott, I don't know what to make of this in the sense of, like, a world championship is a world championship is a world championship. The top three teams in the world weren't there, though. And yeah. Now, one of those teams she went through in the Swiss championship six days after the Olympics ended. But, you know, everyone plays. Everyone has a chance. But also, Anna Hasselberg wasn't there. Rachel Holman wasn't there. So I don't know. Like, especially in the sense of, what is Silvana Tyrannizzoni going to do? I would be very surprised if, given her age and her skill level, unless she chooses not to play anymore, if she's done with curling for whatever reason, I'd be surprised if she doesn't win at least another one.
If she doesn't leave, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to look up here, Sean. What is the year that this... either Switzerland or Canada winning the women's world curling championship start? Was it 2014?
I believe it's 2014. Eve Muirhead, the last not Canadian or Swiss woman to win a world championship.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's nuts, right? It's absolutely nuts. You almost want to say like everyone else is playing for third place. I mean, that's not true because a bunch of other teams have won second place in that time.
Yeah.
But it's nuts. Like, and especially because, with all due respect, the depth of representatives from those two countries is not super deep, right? It's Jennifer Jones and Rachel Holman for Canada. And for the Swiss, it's Tyrannizzoni, Schwaller now, and Pats on her own. Then Pats, of course, with Tyrannizzoni and Miriam Ott.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about that many skips over the course of, 13 world championships who have won.
No, it's not. But the thing is, like, I don't think of Switzerland as a super deep country when it comes to women's curling or men's curling. I think of them as pretty elite at the top level. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, we saw Alina Pats team up with Silvana Tyrannizzoni, right?
Yeah.
So like, and in Sweden, a bit the same thing, right? We had Hasselberg was the successor to
Annette Norberg.
Annette Norberg, yes.
Yeah.
I knew it was another.
Who was also that you also had Margrethe Sigfridsson in there as well, who won a world championship. But yeah, it's sort of with these, with most of the European countries, it's been sort of, this is the whoever era, and now it's the next person's era.
Yeah.
And now this person's era.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like pretty incredible, really.
Yeah.
That it's been so dominant on the top of the podium and similar teams, like you mentioned. But yeah, I don't see. I mean, we can talk about the Swedish team that played. They're
good.
Definitely up and coming.
They're good.
A lot of young teams in this event that will be making noise down the line, I think. But yeah, like I mean, I said this last night after curling, Sean. I think if Rachel Holman's there, they're undefeated through that field.
I think so. I agree. They're really, really good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, Xenia Schwaller was great too. She lost her first game to Japan, didn't lose again, and so she went 8 days without losing a game, and that's hard to do. In any competition. So full credit to them. And it almost makes me want Silvana Tiranzoni to not retire, just to make Switzerland more interesting and have the two of them out on tour. I think that could be a lot of fun, but obviously we'll see. Silvana Tiranzoni, yeah, I believe, is pretty much said as much that she's retiring without saying that she's retiring. So see if there's an official announcement forthcoming there. But overall, yeah, very impressive week. Congratulations to them to go from world juniors in 2024 to world champion in 2026. That's very, very impressive. Very difficult to do, to make that leap. And there you have it, Scott. On the other side of that game, Kerry Anderson still looking for that elusive world championship. Of course, she missed the opportunity to even compete in 2020. And then has had pretty good performances in the four that she's played in. That she's made the playoffs each time, two bronze medals, now a silver medal. Like, nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to hang your head about. And she had a good chance here. This was they were playing pretty well over the course of the week. As you said, a bit of a dip through the middle of the week. I think just a bit of a lull in energy levels and such. Mm-hmm. But now you look at it, and who knows what the future of this team is going to be. Obviously, Shannon Burchard has gone through the issues with her knee. We expect her to keep going. She played great. Carly Burgess, young player, certainly not going to step away from curling, I wouldn't think. See what she wants to do. I think Val might be the question mark on this team. And I say that not knowing anything, but she had her whole family there and seemed like at the end of the game, it was like longer hugs than normal and all that. So you see what happens there, whether she steps away or if this is the end of this team. They have great partnership with her and Kerry. And of course, whatever Kerry Anderson wants to do, because it's a lot of work to grind that out for that long. Yeah. And yeah, so I'm curious to see what happens with this team. But let's say this is the end of this era. What is the legacy of the Anderson, Val, Burchard, Mayer, Burgess period?
I think like they're kind of a dynasty, right? You win four in a row. You know, nobody's taking those four Canadian championships away from you. And then to have a fifth on top of it, yeah. The list of people who have that many is very small. And to do it in an era when Rachel Homan exists and Jennifer Jones exists.
Yeah.
Right. That's really, really impressive. It took Kerry a long time to get out of Manitoba, right? To have that breakthrough and finally beat Jennifer Jones, and be able to finally get onto that bigger stage. And when she got there, she thrived. Mm-hmm. Easily the best team over the course of those 4 years, right? Like, I don't think either of us are doubting that. So to me, like, the legacy of this team is one of champions. I think we look back on them the same way we might look back on the Colleen Jones ranks, right? That yeah. won four in a row in the early 2000s.
They did go to Worlds.
They did.
But there was also this, they had this reputation for a while of, oh, they can't win in the Worlds. Like, they can't do it. And I think Kerry sure. Anderson has unfairly been saddled with that.
I think so too. And I think she like held that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I saw this year in all the interviews, even her behavior, like her interactions with her teammates, she yep. seemed way looser.
Yeah.
100%. Right.
Yep.
And I think that helped them play, right? The pressure was off. They know like they're good enough. They're in this event. Like, I mean, it seems dumb after winning four championships already to be like, now we finally feel like we belong, but they felt like they belonged, and they did. Like we talked about, them and the Swiss team were the two best teams in this event. I don't think that's, you know, anything crazy to say, and they acted like it they acted like they should have been there. They didn't play scared. I think they might have played a bit scared in some of the other world championships they played. And especially in that semifinal game, they came out.
Oh, they were the pressure on fire. Oh my
they were
goodness.
Making everything. It was like lights out, lights out.
Yeah. Like that was a game I didn't, but you could have turned it off after the third end.
I went out for dinner and I did turn it off after the first end and was like,
oh, wow.
After dinner, I'm like, huh, let me check the, oh boy.
That is the quickly. Lights. The party's over.
Yeah. And I thought the same thing in the game before. No, the bronze medal game. Right? No, not the,
The bronze medal game was good.
Yeah.
Until the
there was another game that I was watching that was like that.
Yeah. So just, I think a really good week for them. And the circumstance, we talked about it a bit in the preview, the circumstances of this were so different that they didn't get to play in 2020 in the first one. 2021, you're in that bubble. Then they were in there for, months on end, especially Carey, who also played
everything.
Bubbles, just seeing every corner of every little strain of the carpet of your hotel room that you just have memorized after a while. And then you're looking at in 21, the pressure at that, in 21, it's also the pressure of qualifying Canada for the Olympics.
Yeah.
In that scenario, right? So here you come into this one, the Olympics have happened. You've won your fifth, Scott. He's like, play loose and free. Like have a good time. And that's what it seemed like they did. And good on them, and a very good week for them. So, and as you say, that semifinal just that might have been the best game they played all year.
Yeah,
that was something else,
definitely.
So, elsewhere in the playoffs, mentioned that bronze medal game, it was Isabella Rano defeating Suzuki Fujisawa and Japan in that semifinal, or in that bronze medal game, both of course lost their respective semifinals. Japan in a bit of a blowout to Canada, and Rano tried to claw her way back in the semifinal against Schwaller, just maybe in a, if that had been a 14 end game, maybe, but in a 10 end game, not so much. Fujisawa, full credit to her, she did a spin-a-ram on her last in the game against Canada. Also, Scott, they tried to shake after the seventh. They shook after the seventh, and then the official came over and said, hey, you have to play eight. And so they played eight, and I flipped over to the hockey real quick. I watched one whistle, right, to one whistle of the hockey game. Now, it was an extended whistle. Or time between plays. Yeah. I flipped back, they were on Skip's Rocks. They just zoomed through that end. So in that bronze medal game on Sunday morning, it was tight the whole way through until the eighth end, where in a 3-3 tie, it was a 5 for Isabella Rano and Sweden, and that propels them to the bronze medal. So a medal performance for her in her debut. And I think, Scott, overall, a pretty solid debut for Isabella Rand.
Yeah, Sean. Fujisawa, in her last, in the eighth end there, she was attempting a run back of her own stone. Ended up over-curling or under-curling, I'm not sure. Like, hit everything exactly the wrong way. The stones in the house were organized such that it was a fairly simple 5. It was a super easy 4 if you wanted to just throw some weight at it and lose your shooter. But Rana took it on for 5. Great brushing to get that stone by. It was very, very close. But it was just like, ooh, boy. Yeah. Just ended up in exactly the wrong place. And a pistol by Isabella to finish the end and basically finish the game. That was it there. Japan came back and got a pretty easy 2, but shook after the ninth. But you're right, that game was sort of nip and tuck the whole way, back and forth. And then just, a couple of big mistakes for the Japanese team in that end, leaving too many rocks in play and missing at the wrong time. And that'll get you.
The other two playoff teams were South Korea and Kim Eun-ji and her team, they were, I think, a little off over the course of the week compared to what we've seen before. 8-4 overall on the week. That's good for fifth place. So they come in to the qualifier games. They play Sweden, and Isabella Rano lose in their qualification game 9-5. So not as strong as we've seen them in the past, perhaps not surprising at the end of a long season, but I think they'll be back. They're really good. Of course, there have been some big changes in South Korean women's curling that we'll have to talk about when we talk about lineup changes and see what the landscape is over there. But yeah, you know, good. 8-4 is good, but not as strong as we've seen them in the past. But I think the biggest news out of the two teams that lost in the qualification games is Turquia and Dilşah Yıldız, her team making the playoffs 7-5 through the round robin. They get into the qualifier, lose to Satsuki Fujisawa, play a pretty good game though. They crack a three in the sixth end to take the lead, give it right back in the seventh, but they were fired up after that three. Those high fives and bat packs were pretty strong after that three in the six. And I think, Scott, we've talked about it for years with Turquia and this team with Dilşah, that she's a great player. She's better than she was. Like, she's always had all the shots, a lot more consistent now. And there were still some mistakes, certainly in that semifinal on line calls, sweep calls, like little things, but they're so much better than they were in the past. Mm-hmm. And now it's the point of those finer details that I think Joe said during the broadcast, it takes a good team to being a great team. And the learning curve and the development, I think, might be easier to go from talent that needs to be honed to now you're good, get over the top. And I think that's a fair expectation for them now to be in the mix moving forward.
I think so, yeah. And we talked about this in the preview, and we've talked about it before, is the players in front of Dilşah playing better. We saw it at the lead position. The lead threw 86% on the week. Their third was solidly middle of the pack, 79, almost 80%. It was at the second position that it wasn't quite there, down at 73, second lowest in the field. But we're seeing improvements right ahead in the lineup ahead, and that's translating into easier shots for the fourth stone thrower. Mm-hmm. And she was up at 76%. So
improvement.
It's a big improvement, and it's getting easier shots to be able to convert and capitalize, right? They got out to a 4-0 start too. That's mm-hmm. going to boost the confidence right away, get you playing a little more free and easy, and giving you more of a margin to make some mistakes. They had to win their last game against Italy. They did it.
Yep.
Controlled their own destiny to get in. And yeah, it's great to see. You like to see that.
Absolutely. So great story there. Congratulations to them. The rest of the field, China goes 6-6, just misses out. Italy 5-7, Norway 4-8, Scotland 4-8, Denmark 3-9. The United States, Delaney Strauss goes 2-10, but that is enough to keep them out of the relegation to the B division, as it will be Australia and Helen Williams that are relegated next season. They go 1-11. Scott, I think the big one of those teams for me, the thing that kind of stands out is Torrid Bjørnstad and Norway. They got off to just, you know, you talk about Turquia getting off to a hot start. Norway got off to just a horrific start for them. They lose to Australia. That's the only win Australia gets. And then Norway starts to find their footing. Tough for a rookie team to figure out sort of all the ins and outs of, you know, playing in front of a big, a full building and, you know, loud crowds, all that. So, you know, it takes time. And so they lose that game to Australia. But Scott, they also beat Canada. They beat Sweden in this event. So talent's there. And now they got this first one out of the way and see what happens for them in the future. Very young team, but obviously a lot of talent there.
Yeah, one to watch for sure. Maybe the first world championship for Norway since Doherty Nordby back in the day.
Could be, yeah. Could be in the mix for that, for sure. So there you go, Scott. That is the field there from the 2026 Women's World Curling Championship. Last time that we'll see 13 teams in the field as we go up to 18 next year. So, whew.
I guess Delaney Strauss has got to be thanking the World Curling for changing the format.
And yeah, only one relegated this year.
Be relegated.
Yeah, and just the Australians will have to go back to the qualifier and get in. So the top 12 teams will be back again next year, and then we'll see what other six teams can fill out the field. So Scott, overall, I think it was a pretty good week. Calgary, as always, puts on a good show. Building was pretty full. Even that bronze medal game on a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, based on what we saw on TV, I don't know, half to two thirds full. That's pretty good, I think, for a bronze medal game that doesn't include the host country. Mm-hmm. And then it was pretty full for the other playoffs and the gold medal game. So good job, Calgary. Something tells me that they're going to go back to Winsport.
We'll be there again. Yeah. I think you're right.
Don't move Vic's chair too far.
Yeah, leave it in place. Save him a room there at the old hotel, and we'll be back. We'll see you again. Did you know, Sean, that Calgary was the Blue Sky City?
I don't know. I learned that from the ice.
When did that start?
I don't know.
You know, I've been to Calgary. It's not always been a blue sky. A lot of the time.
I thought, like, on the prairies, they talk about sky of blue, sea of green.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard that. Is this like a new marketing campaign for the city of Calgary?
I'll ask my best friend.
See what ChatGPT says. Yeah. Hey, Calgary, it's happening, man. They showed the arena being built next to the Saddle Dome there. So that's exciting. And, it's a happening place to be, Calgary.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. It's I haven't been to Calgary in a long time. Like, yeah, maybe in over 10 years. Is that possible?
Sure. I've never been out of the airport in Calgary. I've only ever transferred flights there.
Oh, wow.
So got to get to Calgary at some point. Been to Edmonton.
Been to Edmonton. They launched the Blue Sky City in 2024.
Okay. So it is a new endeavor.
It is a modern branding slogan, not an old historic nickname dating back decades.
Okay. There you go. So there you have it. All the goings on from the 2026 Women's World Curling Championship. It was a fun event. And again, congratulations to Xenia Schwaller and Team Switzerland for winning the Women's Worlds. Now, Scott, as we do, let us quote Mr. Smithers, and let's bring on the men for the 2026 Men's World Curling Championship, taking place in Ogden City, Utah. This is the same venue where the 2002 Olympic curling took place during the Salt Lake City Winter Games. Exact same format as we just saw at the Women's World Curling Championship. 13 teams in the field will have a 12-game round robin. The first and second place, or excuse me, the top two teams will have a bye to the semifinals. Three will play six and four will play five in those qualification games. It is moved up a day. Normally, the World Championships will start on a Saturday and on a Sunday. This year, they're going to start on Friday, the 27th, and they will end the following Saturday, which I believe is the 4th of April. And Vic cited Easter for that. The following week, that first weekend of April is Easter. So Vic cited that as the reason why World Curling has moved it up a day. So there you have that. If you have next Friday off, as a lot of folks in Canada do, you have the semifinals will be going on there. If you check that, and then you got Saturday for the finals of the Men's World Curling Championship. Scott, as I did during the Women's World preview, I have ranked the teams based on World Curling Rankings, and I feel like we should go through the field that way.
World curling rankings? Okay.
Yeah, current world curling rankings. But before we go through each of the teams, as always, I do have to ask, how many teams can win?
Three, four?
Ooh, okay.
Three or four.
Three or four. Who you got?
I got Ross White, Matt Dunstone, Nicholas Adin.
Yep.
And then maybe John Schuster can win.
Yeah, I think you got to put John Schuster in there. I agree.
That's it's like him and maybe China are kind of on the bubble to me.
On the fringe. I would also say, I've never seen this guy play, and obviously we'll talk about him. But the strength of the team and the pedigree of Stefano Spiller.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, again, I've never seen him throw a rock, but the resume is pretty impressive. And based on what we just saw by Xenia Schwaller, you know, maybe a rookie can win.
You're right. The resume is very impressive.
It's very impressive. So yeah, I agree. Like, I think at its core, it's four with you could talk me to six, which is pretty good, I think, for a world championship to get to six. So Scott, let's go through the field. And the highest ranked team in the field is the fourth ranked team in the world. And that is Canada and Matt Dunstone, Colton Lott, EJ Harndon, Ryan Harndon are the squad. Jeff Walker will be there as the alternate. Jacob Horgan is currently playing in the mixed doubles Canadian championship, so he won't be there. They've brought in Jeff Walker. This is, of course, the first world championship at the men's level for this team. EJ Harndon and Ryan Harndon have been there before. The team is 34-20 on the season. At the Brier, Matt Dunstone and Colton Lott were the best at their positions in terms of shooting percentage. Ryan Harndon and EJ Harndon were the second best shooting percentage at their positions. So really a dominant performance over the course of the week for them. Did, of course, lose the 1-2 game, but hey, that happens sometimes and come through and win the final. Scott, only nine multiples. They only gave up nine multiples against in the 12 games they played in the Brier, and that's pretty good defense. You're not going to lose a lot of games by not giving up multiples. And given how all of them can throw the high hard one, they can play really good defensively, but they also have the ability to set stuff up. Colton and Matt, I think the biggest change that we've seen over the past couple of years with them, it's not the peel weight stuff, it's the softer stuff. Mm-hmm. And the precision that they now have. They were always very good, but now they're just pinpoint accuracy. And if they can keep that up, for me, they're not the favorite, but that's partly selfish because of a prediction I made in January on the bold predictions episode. But I think, you know, they're obviously, if they're not one, they're 1A.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 for sure. And like their steel defense, like you talked about them playing defensively on the season is 0.11. Which is easily the best in the field. It's like 3 percentage points better than anybody else. And when you're not allowing teams to steal, you're either forcing them, and their force efficiency is at 57%, 0.57, mm-hmm. Or you're stealing yourself.
Right.
Right? Or no, you're converting the hammer. Hold on. You're not allowing steals.
Correct.
You're converting with the hammer. And then you're also forcing them, given their force efficiency.
Their force efficiency, yes.
It's just making for a super, super strong team. Keep the other team off the scoreboard. Score points yourself. Somebody told me once that the key to winning is scoring more points than the other team.
Yeah.
And that'll get you there.
Yeah, it's all the math. It's just, you know, the math of it all.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, they're really, really good. But again, you know, first time there, we'll see what happens. But the thing is, the next highest ranked team is also a team of rookies, a full team of rookies here, whereas Team Canada at least has two guys who've been there before. And it is Scotland, though, with Ross White, Robin Bryden, Craig Waddell, And Ewan Kyle, Duncan McFadzian is there as well. He'll probably get some reps over the course of the week. This team is really, really good. 48 and 18 on the season. They did lose the final of the Masters Grand Slam to Matt Dunstone, but they are a regular feature now on the Grand Slam circuit. Will be for a while, it seems like. And, I think for me, it's looking ahead the next 4 years within Scottish men's curling and see what, if there's any lineup changes or what guys want to do. But that kind of three-headed race as it is right now is going to be a lot of fun to watch. And one of my bold predictions for 2026 was that Ross White would win the world championship. I'm going to stick with that because why not? But they're really good as well, Scott. And again, if they're not one, they're 1A.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this team is excellent. You know, I like the doubletakeout.com rankings. On that site, they're flipped. Ross White's team is 4, Dunstone's 5, but their rating points, which is similar to Elo rating, if you think about a chess player, and that rating is used to compute the win probability against an opponent. Anyway, you can look it up if you want. If you have a higher rating than your opponent, you're more likely to beat them.
Right.
But you can tell based on the difference in the ratings how likely you are to win. These teams are 0.01 apart in the ratings. That's as much of a coin flip as you're going to get. Yeah. So yeah, when we say 1 or 1A, that's it. Like, this team is really good at everything. They're not as good as at Dunstone at the steel defense, but they're a little bit better at force efficiency. I think any way you slice it, these two teams are deservingly the top two favorites.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's move down a couple spots to number 7 in the world rankings. It is Italy, and it is not Joel Returnaz skipping. Stefano Spiller is in at the skip position alongside Amos Messener, Sebastiano Arman, and with another change in the lineup, it is not Mattia Giovinella at the lead position. He is going to be the alternate here, and instead the alternate from the Olympics, Alberto Pimpini, will be in the lead position. This team did go 4-5 at the Olympic Games, but again, with the change in skip, that doesn't mean that much here. Spiller is the 2025 World Junior Champion. He went 8-1 in the round robin of that event, beat Korea and Norway in the playoffs. Scott, we haven't gotten an official announcement from Italian curling as to why, just that Returnaz stepped away from this event. He's going to play in the Rock League. It seems like there's been no announcement to the alternative, whereas Dunstone's team has announced that they are withdrawing from the Rock League after this event. So it could just be a case of he's exhausted, wants to play in the Rock League. He's played in a ton of these. And you got this young guy who you would expect, if he wants to pursue curling, continue with curling, could be the next Returnaz and carry Italian curling through the next decade or so on the men's side. And again, he's demonstrated that certainly at the junior level, he's got it all there. And maybe this is just, all right, this is the start of the next generation of Italian men's curling.
Yeah, I mean, we could see him in 2046 when the Winter Olympics likely return to Northern Italy, as they seem to have done the last 20 years, yeah. You know? Yeah, this front of the team is really, really good. This new skip, really, really good. It's just about how they're going to work together, right?
Yeah.
That's the only wild card. If Italian curling is confident enough to do this, they must think it's going to be pretty good. And the pedigree is there. So, yeah.
I mean, Scott, but I don't think, I mean, obviously the circumstances are different in not an Olympic year and that you haven't played in the Olympics. But I don't think countries are going to do this where like qualifying points are at stake. Right. Like, I don't think, and I sure. think rightfully so, that Italy's worried about being relegated and having to go through the qualifying event next year just given what we have at the bottom of the field, that these guys should not be in that discussion, like, at all, or close to it. So again, it's this question of what, like, again, a world championship is a world championship. That means something. You can never take it away. But for the association, like, what is at stake here, right? Everything was about the Olympics this year. So if you're Italian curling, if you're going to take a chance at a world championship and try something, this is the one to try something.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just mean, like, they probably wouldn't do it if, you know, these guys hated each other for some reason off the ice, right? Like, they're not going to put them in a situation where it's going to stunt the development of Spiller. But looking forward, Joel Retournez is probably not going to be the curler that qualifies Italy for the next Olympics. So let's get started now.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as it's not like a Jets and the Sharks, it's fine.
Yeah. Then it's fine, right?
We're fine.
And to be honest, given the age difference between Retournez and the rest of the team, this is probably the plan, the succession plan.
Yep.
So, it'll be fun to see them play and to see, you know, we've seen the results on the internet. I have, but I haven't seen them play. So it'll be fun to see them play.
All right, Scott, let's move down to the next team. It is the 8th ranked team in the world. That is the United States of America, represented by John Schuster, Christopher Plies, Colin Huffman, and Matt Hamilton. This is the 12th appearance for John Schuster, but he has never medaled at a world championship. They did qualify going through the USA Nationals a few weeks ago. They went undefeated through the round robin, but lost to Andrew Stipera in the 1-2 game, came back, recovered to beat Kevin Tuma in the semifinal, and then Stipera in the final there. They've played really well record-wise this season, 51-18. And what's great about John Schuster is he doesn't need play-by-play people on his game. He'll do it for you. So, Vic, you can take that game off. Just take it easy. John's got you covered. Mm-hmm. And so he's a lot of fun to watch. As the home team, this should be a lot of fun as well, given how into it the American crowds were at the Olympics. And Utah's a great winter sports state. Salt Lake City is a great sport town. So I would expect pretty good crowds there in Ogden for these guys. My only real sort of nitpicky, I don't know if it's even nitpicky, is I'm a fan of sleeves. I think sleeves are great. They're a wonderful invention. And I'm a fan of sleeves. That's all.
Okay. Sean, there's
I like them. Sleeves are good.
Guns are legal in the U.S., so we get what we get. This team, Sean, as sneaky, I think, had a really good year, given that they weren't Team USA at the Olympics. They have the highest combined team index of any of the teams in the field. That's the addition of the steel efficiency, force efficiency, hammer efficiency, and steel defense. Combining all of those statistics into one metric, they're leaps and bounds the highest in the field. They have 79 games on their docket, so it's not a small sample size. It is a bit of a who did they play? But they did play in some pretty big events throughout the year. So 6-10 on the year against top 10 ranked teams. But they're sort of doing all the right things. They did have a few slow starts in that USA Nationals, especially in the 1-2 game. And even in the finals, had to battle back, but played a perfect back end in that final. Took one in the extra, and that's how the game works. So, yeah, I think this could be a sneaky contender this week.
Yeah, I agree. So with that, let's move down to the number 12 team in the world that is representing China. It is Xiaoming Zhu alongside Zhu Qing Fei, Ji Chao Li, and Sen Yu. is going to be playing lead. This is the team that was in the Olympics, with the exception of Sen Yu. He did not play in that event. It was Jingtao Zhu who is out here. So that is the lineup change that we have from the Olympic Games. It is Xiaoming Zhu's ninth appearance at a world championship. This team went 8-4 last year in 2025. That was enough to qualify them for that last chance qualifier. They got enough points there, but not quite enough to get into the Olympic Games. They did beat Norway in the qualification round, the loss to Switzerland and Canada at first in the semifinal and then the bronze medal match, respectively. Did go 2-7 at the Olympics, but statistically, Scott, if you look at shooting percentage, they were all pretty much in the middle of the pack. So this could potentially be a regression to the mean sort of thing in terms of the results of the games. They had four of their seven losses were by 2 points, one loss by 3 points. So they weren't getting blown out in that event. And again, the shooting percentages were middle of the pack-ish. So some of the peripheral numbers were a lot better than a 2-7 record. And so coming into this field, again, seeing what they did last year, they were pretty good at that qualification event in Kelowna to get to the Olympics as well. This should be a playoff team, I think.
I think so. We'll probably see them around that 7-5 mark, maybe squeaking in a 6-6, but that should definitely be their goal, especially in this field.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's move on to the 13th ranked team in the world. That is the Swedish side. Familiar faces of Niklas Edin, Oscar Eriksson, Rasmus Rano, and Christopher Sundgren here. It is the 15th appearance for Niklas Edin in a world championship. These are the seven-time world champions. 8-4 last year, lost to Scotland in that qualification round. Very disappointing week at the Olympic Games for them. And I don't know, I didn't hear anything else about what happened at the Olympics. On ice. Struggled, didn't play well, and nothing else happened with this team. And so there will be no distractions, and I'm sure the crowd won't bring up anything else.
No. And I think, Sean, like, might this be the final ride for King Nicholas?
Very well could be. He's got nothing left to prove.
No, I mean, like, we talked about Kerry Anderson's resume sort of being already solidified as one of the greatest in Canada, and certainly the greatest of her era. Niklas Edin, come on, unimpeachable resume. That said, this team has not had a good year overall on the ice, not just the Olympics. Like, we talked about it in the Olympic preview that they were struggling. They only did worse at the Olympics. They're second last in the field in terms of hammer factor this year, only to Poland, which is pretty crazy. It's not something you'd think of with a Niklas Edin team. That said, he's like still on the team. So, and they're all good players.
Yeah.
So you can never count them out, but I'm really not expecting anything big this week.
No, me neither. And you got to think that Niklas himself is pretty beat up. The number of surgeries he's had and that. So, like, again, like, if this is it, you know, we'll do something in the summer and try to situate him within the pantheon of the game. But he's right up there as one of the greatest to ever do it.
Yeah, he'll, when his career is over, he will take his rightful place in Asgard alongside the rest of the Norse gods.
Yes. There you go. So, yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see, of course, what I am genuinely curious to see what, if any, crowd reaction there is to these guys. First event since. Now, it's not Canada. I'm going to be more interested to see what happens in the Rock League. But we'll see. Sorry, Scott, let's move on to the 16th ranked team in the world. It is Japan. It is Yanagisawa Riku alongside Yamaguchi Tsuyoshi, Yamamoto Takeru, and Koizumi Satoshi. It is Shiyoshi, who is the skip throwing the third rocks, he is making his ninth appearance at a world championship. A few of those are with are as alternate there. This team did go 4-3 back at the Pan Continental Championship, lost to Canada in the semifinal, but did beat China to come home with the bronze medal there. They went 5-2 at the last chance qualifier. That was good enough for third place, and unfortunately for them, lost to China in that last qualifier game. So they did not make it in to the Olympic field. Obviously disappointing for them. Scott, the depth in Japanese curling is certainly on the women's side is there. It's not nearly as deep on the men's side. And we've seen that for years here. But these guys are out on tour, right? They play in Canada. They've had some good results here and there over the course of the year. But if you look at, say, that Pan Continental, like, you know, could they beat the teams they should have? They lost to the teams that maybe they should have. And in this field, if you kind of follow that thing, that basically leads to a 500 record.
Yeah, I'm looking at all the Japanese teams that are tracked on doubletakeout.com. There's three teams that are ranked number 30, 35, and 39. All have played quite a bit, ranging from like 60 to some over 100 games. Whoa. This year. When I look at their record, the record against teams ranked 1 to 25 is middling to below 500. The ranks against everybody else, pretty good. So I think these are the kind of teams that have all the shots, the technical ability. They just need more reps to see what they can do and see if it's steel sharpens steel as they start playing more games against the top teams. So this team, I think, is a sneaky pick for a playoffs. Their underlying stats are pretty good, but again, they've done it against teams that are not maybe as good as the teams they'll face in this field.
Yeah, and that's where kind of the rubber has to hit the road on that, right? And
for sure.
Yeah, and sort of who will stand out there for this for Japan and sort of what the next 4 years looks like for them as we head to the next cycle. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move down a couple spots in the world rankings to number 18. It is Switzerland. It is going to be Philipp Hösli throwing the four stones. The team is skipped, though, by his brother, Marco Hösli. He is throwing the third stones alongside Simon Glur and Justin Hauscher. This team, 29-29 on the season, did make it into the Tahoe Slam, where they went 1-3. Also made it into at least one other slam this year. So they've played their way into the slams, being out on tour, having some pretty good results. This is a team that has transitioned in the past few years from the junior to the men's game, as Marco is the 2019 and 2020 World Junior silver medalist. So Scott, as we've seen over the years, it takes a while to make that transition from men's from junior into the men's game, and this is just part of that process for these guys. So again, I think, like with Japan, if I was handicapping this, if I was in Vegas, I'd put the over under at either like 5.5 or 6.5 as a betting line for them, because it kind of what it feels like to me is like 500-ish as they continue to grow and develop in their first time here.
Yeah, for sure. We just saw Xenia Schwaller, though, go and win a world championship. I think this field is deeper than the field that was at the women's. But they did beat Yannick Schwaller to get to win the Swiss championship, to get to this event. Mm-hmm. Beat him 2 out of 3 games, won the last two. So they're capable. And that Schwaller team, yeah, coming off the Olympics, a long season of grinding, they're still really good. And you got to beat them. And so just to be able to do that and get into this event, I think shows a lot. So I think they're a big unknown. I think your over under kind of makes sense, but I would probably put the money on the over for either of those numbers.
Yeah. Based on talent.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Bet on the talent. Yeah. All right, Scott, let's go down to the 20th ranked team in the world. That is Germany, represented by Mark Moskatowicz in his 8th appearance. He is with Benjamin Kapp, Felix Mezensal, and Johannes Schürrle. This team went 4-5 at the Olympic Games, 5-7 last year in 2025, which was good for seventh place. If you look at the numbers, though, Moskatowicz was the sixth-ranked skip in the field, but it was Mezenzahl and Schürrle who were lower down in the ranks, which makes sense. They're on the younger side, less experienced than Moskatowicz. And I think as this team goes, Mark has all the shots, right, Euro champions in 2024, but it's going to be up to those two guys at the front end to keep up with everybody else to make sure that Kapp and Moskatowicz at the back end aren't playing too high difficulty shots. So to me, I'm kind of watching what the front end is doing here, as I think that will carry them throughout the week if they can find success.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to put it, Sean. The front end is going to dictate how well the back end is going to be able to play. And that'll dictate how they do. They could finish anywhere from like 8-4 to 3-9 on the week, and I wouldn't be surprised by any of it.
Oh. All right, Scott, let's jump down a few spots to 28th in the world, and it is Czechia and our pal Lukasz Klima alongside Marek Cernovsky, Martin Jurek, and Lukasz Klipa. They did bring Vit Chabakovsky in as the alternate. He, of course, was the mixed doubles representative at the Olympic Games for Czechia. Young guy, I think 21, 22 in that range. So good for them to bring him along as the alternate as potentially we look to the future of Czechia men's curling. These guys went 3-6 at the Olympics, but as we said in the preview, the point for them was being at the Olympics, and that was the prize for them grinding as hard as they have for the past 8 years to get there. Really cool story for them. But if we look at this week, Scott, last year they went 6-6, missed the playoffs by one game. And I got to say, if there's a year where they're going to make the playoffs and maybe make a bit of noise, I think this is it.
I think it's their best chance. Yeah, you're right. You talked about their Olympics. They did win their last three games, beating Moskatowicz, beating Shu, and beating Adin, three teams that are in this field.
Yeah,
that's got to give them some confidence. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but if they're able to get out to a quick start, that might help a little wind under their sails too, and we might be more likely then to see them come up at the end of the week. But yeah, I kind of like them as a flyer for this.
Yeah. Yeah, take the like Dilsat Yildiz playoff spot that we saw last week.
Yeah,
I can see him in that.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, Scott, let's move down to the 40th spot in the world rankings. It is the South Koreans this year, represented by Kim Soo Hyuk, Kim Chang Min, Min Hyun Yoo, and Hak Hyun Kim. It is the sixth appearance for Kim Soo Hyuk at a world championship. This team is 37-21 on the season. Only a 42% hammer efficiency, though, which isn't great, especially that they're not playing in some of the top level tour events, not the highest competition that some of the other teams in this field are playing against regularly. They did go 3-4 at that last chance qualifier in Kelowna. A tough loss there to Anton Hood in New Zealand that kind of sealed their fate in that field. 3-4 back at the Pan Continental last year, beat Australia, New Zealand, and the Philippines in that event. Scott, one thing that those three teams have in common is that they're not in this event. So they beat the teams that they should have, I would say, or that you'd expect them to based on world rankings there at the Pan Continental Championship. Some of the peripherals for this team aren't great. And again, like South Korean women's curling is so good. And like with Japan, we just haven't seen it as much on the men's side. And yeah, they should win a few games here, but it's kind of hard to see a path to the playoffs, just given where they've been in some of their past big events.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye on them. Their second game is against the U.S. They open against Canada. That's going to be really tough. If they're able to beat the U.S., though, they got Poland, Czechia, Germany right after. They might be able to get on a bit of a roll. Their metrics, from what I'm looking at on my spreadsheet here, they're like middle of the road for this field. So their aspiration should be to make the playoffs. But again, I don't know if history tells us, they are unlikely to do it.
All right, Scott, again, let's jump down another few spots to Norway, the 48th ranked team in the world. It is Andreas Horstad making his second appearance in a world championship, first with this team that has Wilhelm Ness, Michael Malmsetter, and Matthias Brenden. All of them have been at world championships before, a few of them in alternate roles. So first time as a foursome here. They did bring, I think, good idea, one Magnus Ramsfeld as their alternate. A lot of experience, of course, coming off the bronze medal as well. So good experience there on the bench for Horstad. His last appearance was in 2019 as the lead for Magnus Ramsfeld. The team overall 27 and 16 on the season, but they are not playing in top level events out on tour. Good events, like good cash level events, but not the big top events out there. So tough to know what to make of this team, but I think similar to the South Koreans, that maybe if you get in a role and get some confidence and the schedule breaks right, maybe something. But again, it's hard to see a pathway to the playoffs.
Yeah, tough. Though they have beaten Nicholas Edin this year, they have beaten John Schuster this year, and they beat Ross White at the Perth Masters as well. So it's there. The consistency is what they're going to be looking to develop over the next 4 years. So, yeah. That's the goal this year, is to keep that development going.
And finally, Scott, the 13th team in the field, it is Poland, and they are represented by Konrad Stich alongside Krzysztof Domen, Marcin Siemiński, and Bartosz Labaza. They are 18 and 28 on the season. They went 3-6 back at the Euros to qualify them for this event, beat Austria, Denmark, and Norway in that event. And this is Poland's first time at a men's world curling championship. They came out of the B side back in 2024 at the Euros to get up to the A side, made the most of that opportunity. And now they are here, Scott. Very cool story for Poland. Check off another team that has played now in a world championship. Great for the growth of the sport. Good on them. And I think the goal should be to not get relegated and book your spot next year. But given the new format, you know, these guys are going to be in the mix. So at some point, you would expect them probably to get relegated. But again, with the 18 teams, these are guys who should be in the mix to qualify each year. They might not qualify each year moving forward. There might be some years they don't, but good first step to get that experience. And again, if they want to continue to play at the end of the cycle and see what they do. But yeah, guys who you know, learn their names, right? Because they could be with us for a while as people who follow the sport.
Yeah, it'll be, like you said, Sean, fun to see Poland at this kind of an event. I think Ryan and Jonathan have done some episodes on Polish curling.
I think so.
If you want to go back and listen to those. And if not, I hallucinated it and the way it is. But yeah, like they're probably going to get relegated.
Probably.
They beat the right teams. We talked at the beginning, at the top of the show, Sean, about Carrie Anderson unfortunately missing some shots at the wrong time, right? Not missing a lot, but missing at the wrong time. For Poland, it's a bit the opposite. They won the right games that they needed to win to get them here. They haven't won a lot of games, but they won the right ones. And so, yeah, I hope they have like a really fun time, feel proud repping their country. And yeah, if they can, we talked about Australia and the women's side trying to, you know, get a game to go to 10 at what being the goal. And then they won their first game. So I think that's the goal for Poland as well. I'll pull up their schedule real quick to see who they start with. Switzerland, Korea, Germany, Scotland, Canada. Then Czechia. Fun.
Tough. Yeah. And if you look at the world rankings, so I don't think I mentioned it, they're 90th in the world. And so that's, you know, 42 spots from the Norwegians, who are 48. So
Yeah, their team rating is 8.10. The highest rating is 11.23. Mm-hmm. If I did some quick math as to what percentages that would be, I'll do it at the end of the episode after you wrap up your thing.
Okay. So there you go. Those are the 13 teams in the field at the Men's World Curling Championship. Again, starting on Friday, the 27th, finals on Saturday, the 4th. Utah, Ogden City, is in the same time zone as Calgary. So same draw times do apply there, although I believe Friday they're starting a little earlier on the half hours instead of on the hours. So check your local listings for when this starts. Of course, TSN has all the Canada games here in Canada and around the world. It'll be the same coverage story as the Women's World for wherever it is you are. But Scott, I've already planted my flag of who I think's going to win. So I got Ross White, and I'll take him in the final, perhaps unsurprisingly, over Matt Dunstone, because I think the Canadians are really good. And give me a bronze medal for John Schuster is what I got here. So who do you like in the 2026 Men's World Curling Championship?
Well, Sean, you know that all I do is pick winners, because yes, I did correctly predict Team Switzerland to win the Women's World Championship. Way out on a limb, I know. Canada and Switzerland have traded the banner back and forth. But you know what? I think Maddie Dunstone, I picked him to win the Brier. I'm going to pick him to win this. The Sheriff has arrived in the West, you know, the West of the U.S. It's perfect. It's a great analogy. No problems with it at all. Give me Dunstone over John Schuster in the final with Ross White rounding out the podium. Okay. So it's the same podium, just different a shuffle order. In order.
That'd be fun. Another Canada-US final in a,
yeah.
another sport.
I know.
There's been a lot of those recently.
And we kind of want one to go our way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you look at like Olympic, Paralympic, the hockey, all three were Canada US finals and the Americans won all three of them.
And the World Baseball Classic, we had that game. Yeah. And
at least Holman beat Tabitha Peterson in the playoffs.
That's true. That's true.
In the bronze medal game.
Okay, so one for four.
We got that. Yeah. So there you go. Those are our picks for the World Curling Championship. We'll be back with you next week. We'll be talking about the Rock League next week. Some lineup changes in the Rock League, but we'll talk about all the goings on, what will be happening at Maple Leaf Gardens, that's sponsored by something now and is also a grocery store, but it will always be Maple Leaf Gardens to me. Down there in downtown Toronto. So we'll talk all about that next week. So if you want to hear that show and everything else we got going on, please do subscribe if you have not yet. You can do the likes, rates, comments, all that good stuff. Helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Head on over to GameOfStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, Game of Stones Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show, GameOfStonesPodcast@gmail.com. Scott, we have one game left in our season.
We do.
And just as everybody wants to do at the end of the season, I had what I think was my best game of the year on Monday. And if it wasn't my best, it was the game that I felt the most comfortable with both hitting the broom and the speed. So just in time to shut it down for the summer.
Oh, man. I said this to Carrie today. I said, Sean was really good last night. Like, yeah, the shot that sprung to mind, they had a center guard. They threw a draw around it. There was probably an eighth of a rock sticking out.
If that, yeah. Because I think I yelled down, I can barely see it.
Yeah, and I was like, we were up by quite a bit. I was like, oh, do you want to chase it? Or do you want to just peel? I said, oh, let's chase it. Why not? And yeah, you threw like perfect hack weight. Came right around, hit most of the rock. Like,
yeah,
I was like, whoa,
got good finish. Yeah, and
that was great.
Yeah, shooter stayed.
It was really easy to read. Like, the release was really nice, right at the stick, and just sort of gradually curled the whole way down. We were able to hold it with the sweeping, and yeah, no, it was awesome. And I think you guys really won the game for us, the front end, by putting your rocks in places, and then the other team missed.
Yeah.
But all I had to do all night was like throw a few guards and make a couple hits, and it was pretty easy for me.
Yeah, well, I said to Jess, so we scored three in the first end, and at some point we had a chance potentially to sit five, or maybe even six was in play for a minute. Yeah. And I said to Jesse after we scored the three, I said, has there ever been a disappointing three? Have you ever scored a three and been like, did we just leave something on the table?
And it was a steal too, like a disappointing steal of three.
Yeah, or like was it was.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember. Like, we stole two. We stole two in the second end for sure. That was definitely a steal. And I had the same feeling. I was like, should we have scored more? I think Tom made a really good one to cut us down to two, or something, or maybe his first one was really good that only let us score two. Like,
yeah. And then when we had the hammer finally, we had one sort of on the button, and then he froze.
Yeah.
And I had a really tough shot that probably wasn't there. And so we just got our one.
Yep.
And I was like, damn, like we were in control the whole game. It felt really good.
Yeah.
And then we heard after the game that our opponent next week played the game of his life the week before against the people that we played against last night. And so.
And he played great. Well, I don't know if he played great, but he blew out the team last night that he played. So
yeah,
he's on a heater.
Yeah. Let me see if the results are up here. This is what everybody tunes in for, right?
Hey, you know, we're playing for money now. This is the last draw. This is where it gets serious.
It says he only won by 1 point.
Oh, so comeback. Because he was up four when we got off the ice.
Yeah.
I thought it was four with the hammer.
Wow.
And I could be wrong on the hammer part, but.
After last night's game, we are plus 28.
In four games.
But.
Doesn't matter.
It all comes down to this one.
We lose by one, and we're 4-1 with a plus 27. We're still not getting that money.
Not getting those bar bucks. But, I'm excited.
Yeah, and then it'll be a fun game.
After you guys all left, I was like, right. I was supposed to ask the team if we were going to do anything after the game tomorrow or next week.
Oh, to commemorate?
To commemorate our another season.
Yeah, should. Could.
Yeah.
Why not?
So a beer after the game at the club?
Yeah, let's go. That'd be a change for me.
Yeah.
You know? We'll figure something out. That's a really good idea. So, season's winding down, as I know it is for a lot of folks out there. So weather hasn't turned yet in Ottawa, so it doesn't feel like the season's winding down. But hopefully for all you out there, you've had a good season. And for those of you, I know the folks who play in the arenas, a lot of the folks in the U.S. are friends down there. Get ready for your season. So hopefully you're looking forward to getting back out on the ice. Now, Scott, real quick before we sign off, you said you were going to do some math.
Yeah.
What is it?
So there's an 85% chance that Ross White would beat Team Poland in any given game at the start of the game. Not knowing who has hammer, right?
Okay.
And so in chess, it's the same. It doesn't know if you have white or black to start.
Right.
In the final that I predicted, Dunstone against John Schuster, Dunstone would have a 56.6% probability of winning that game.
Okay.
Based on their respective scores.
Okay.
So... I think I like my pick.
That's a good pick. Yeah.
And Ross White would have an equally high chance of beating John Schuster by that score.
So that would therefore, by extension, mean that Dunstone and Ross White are relatively equal.
Yeah. Like I said, their points are one point.
Really close. Yeah. There you go. It should be a really fun week out there in Ogden City, Utah. If you're going out there, enjoy yourselves. Have a really good time. As I said, we'll be back with you next week to talk all about the Rock League. But until then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
make the final.